Chris. All right,
yeah, I'm Paul Schaefer.
I'm Will Lee.
And you are watching the Letterman Podcast.
La 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 la.
Welcome once again to the Letterman Podcast. My name is Mike Chisholm. Okay, I'm excited about this one. Of course, you are, Mike. You're excited about all of them. Yeah, okay, but this is a first. This is a first. We have a guy who was on Stupid Human Tricks. And it's our first one. And, you know, I didn't know. When we first started this show, I got to tell you, the little blueprint that I kind of made as to the type of guests that we would have, we've talked a lot about that. And then my predictions as to who the guests were going to be at the beginning were completely inaccurate. I thought that this show would have a lot of community members at first and then move on to folks who were featured on the show, but kind of like the every man, the every woman who were featured on the show, folks who the show touched either by pranking, encountering in the streets and everyday life, that kind of a thing, that people would come out of the woodwork to talk about that more. And folks have, they've reached out to me. But and then, of course, folks featured in Stupid Human or Stupid Pet Tricks. I thought that we would have a lot of those at the beginning, and then we would kind of move over to some of the staffers and all of that stuff. And then suddenly we're inundated with all of these amazing staffers and the Letterman Podcast moved in that direction. And we didn't really get a huge influx of folks who were touched by the show in those ways. So today, on this episode of the Letterman Podcast, we have somebody who was featured and rarely it didn't happen. Didn't happen that often where somebody was actually featured on Stupid Human Tricks twice. His name is Chris Clark. Chris Clark, awesome guy. And he really goes into both times that he was on Stupid Human Tricks. Comes from he's second generation or third generation performer. He comes from a family of performers, which is really neat. You know, his family worshiped, you know, like the vaudeville, Ed Sullivan type days. And then of course the Tonight Show being the gold standard. So when Chris was old enough, you know, a performer in his own right, of all sorts, he's like a performing entrepreneur, and you could just feel it that this guy just wants to perform. He's a wedding DJ, but he does other things as well, juggling and magic, and he's done some stand up and all sorts of stuff. He just wants to perform. And I certainly can relate. You know, when you have somebody who is just chasing their dream, they're just chasing their desire. That is certainly something that I can relate to. And I appreciate the audience here who puts up with, you know, with me as a determined amateur, yet at the same time wanting more. And I think in many ways I can relate to Chris, and it was really cool. There's a moment where he talks about the feeling after the first time he performed a Stupid Human Trick on Late Show, and it was in 2008, and it was afterwards, and he went out to have this an amazing steak meal, and he just walked out in New York, and he just felt there's no feeling like it. And I certainly can relate to that. It was watching him relive that experience and the emotion of it. You know, it's something money can't buy. Feeling like that is just one of those things that just, well, maybe it could. It would just be very expensive somehow. Some sort of designer drug, perhaps. But no, like this is manufactured life. It's real. It's a real thing, manufactured only by a legitimate experience that just has touched him for the rest of his life. He's a different person because he got to be on Stupid Human Tricks. And then he kept going for it. And again, in 2013, he was on again. And we're going to show some, we're not going to have the volume on them or whatever. But as he's going through what his Stupid Human Tricks were, we've got the video that we can kind of show a couple clips of it. So this might be one of those ones where the audio audience wants to jump over to the Spotify video or the YouTube to watch. But it just... a really cool guy, and he's still accepting gigs, by the way. You can get in contact with Chris at MrWizardMagic.com. So MrWizardMagic.com, head on over and see that. And I just am very excited to finally have some of these folks who performed on the show, appeared on the show. As far as stupid human trick performers. This was a really great place to start. The Letterman Podcast is proud to present two-time stupid human trick performer, Chris Clark. Chris Clark, this is a momentous occasion for the Letterman Podcast. We have said right from the very beginning, we've wanted to have folks who were featured in segments on the show, particularly Stupid Pet and Stupid Human Tricks. It hasn't happened in the 18 months or so that we've done this show. It hasn't happened yet. You are our very first Stupid Human Trick contestant, combatant, perhaps, for those who are wagering. And not only did you do it once, you did it twice. Thank you so much for allowing the reach out to happen and us to connect and you to come on to the Letterman Podcast and talk about your time on Stupid Human Tricks. It's great to have you here, man.
I appreciate it. I'm adjusting my screen here. Okay. Yeah, thanks for having me. What a cool show you have. And I've been watching your videos and all your guests, and especially Paul Schaefer, you know, it's great to see him. Are you aware that he wrote that song, It's Raining Men?
Absolutely. He sure did.
Yeah. That was something that I found out, and I'm a DJ as well. That's what I do. So I play that song, and then I found out that Paul wrote that song. So when you did that whole interview, which is like well over like 90 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. I love hearing about his start and how he started with that Broadway play, The Magician. It was a magician.
Godspell. They did Godspell in Toronto. Absolutely. And met everybody at that point who are still friends to this day. And legends in show business themselves.
I read in one of the books, I heard him explaining what the word gig means. You know, when you say the word gig, and how back in the day it was God is good, God is good. And they would say, I have a gig. See, that's what that meant. So I might jump around a little, but like the Ed Sullivan Theater, you know, is a real vaudeville historical place. You know, a lot of circus performers perform there. And back in those days of the Ed Sullivan Show, they had open auditions. I'm a magician and a juggler, and part of my background in performing is I grew up as an entertainer.
Yep.
So in a family of entertainers, and I've been in show business my whole life.
That's fairly common too, isn't it? There's a lot of folks who are like second and third generation. And like, I think about a guy like Jeff Altman, his father, you know, as well. And some of these other people that are out there, that's pretty common, isn't it? That a lot of people take on the family business of entertainment.
Did you talk with him, Jeff?
Yeah. I've talked to them a couple times. I talked to them on this show and on my Men's Mental Wellness podcast. Altman's fantastic.
Yeah, I always liked him as a comedian. I always liked him as a comedian, and he would go on Dave and chit chat and just, things are coming to my mind. I'm going to be jumping around, but I went to this Aspen Comedy Festival in 2005 as just a guest and not performing. But I do stand up too, but not on the level like these guys that come on, you know, not like Brian Regan or anything, you know, just comedy clubs. But when I went to the Aspen Comedy Festival, you remember Terry Garr?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the legendary guest on Letterman for sure.
This is in 2005. I went from the airport from Michigan to this small airport, which would take you over to Aspen.
Mm-hmm.
And there she is sitting right there. There she is going on the same plane I am over to the Aspen thing. And I was starstruck. I didn't really know how to talk to her, you know, and just what to say. But she was sitting right there. And then I thought, I'm seeing somebody who was on Dumb and Dumber already. She was on there.
Yeah.
And she didn't have a huge role, but she had a role on there. And then I went over to that Aspen Comedy Festival and I saw Jim Carrey. But because that was the reason I went was because of to see him, but also to try and get my foot in the door. And what I was going to tell you is before we came on here, I wanted like somebody who's watching us right now, who mm-hmm. who's just a regular person, just performing, wondering how they get on TV. First of all, I got on all these shows, Letterman, Leno, mm-hmm. Rachel Ray, America's Got Talent, mm-hmm. with no agent. But one nice thing I got to say about Dave, because people are like, which one did you like the best, you know? And, you know, I got to say Dave, because he, first of all, he brought me on twice. That means he liked me. Uh-huh. He must have liked me.
Yep.
He gave that little door opening to the average person that if you had something unique, if you had an interesting trick or something with your pet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, though, you probably already know this because you're very well now. You have a lot of knowledge in all this. But you know, when we went to those shows, me and my friend Ken, he was my sidekick. Well, he turned out to be the feature guy because of his he has that deadpan face. You know what I mean?
Ken has a very interesting look. I wanted to ask you a lot about Ken. Yeah, in both of your appearances on Stupid Human Tricks, it's clearly you and Ken. And the focal point, certainly Ken has that certain something that makes him a focal point, whatever you want to call it.
He has that thing that Dave likes, that look at the camera, like, you know, you're just like, you know, looking at the camera. And so it was kind of nice that I was going to say, because as you know, with all these other shows, they don't give that little door opening to the average person, really, unless they're out on the street interviewing people. But I wish they would do that more, because, you know, back in the day, they had literally, I have magician friends who are older, and they say, oh yeah, I went down and auditioned for Ed Sullivan, and a friend of mine was a singer and he got on one time, you know.
Yep.
And you know, your skilled magicians, actually the magicians that people know of for some type of fame, that if you talk to most of them, they were on Ed Sullivan. In fact, all your Motown artists, all your Motown artists got their boost from that Ed Sullivan show, you know?
Well, and it was a tradition that was continued, obviously, with Johnny Carson. And there was always a place in pop culture, securely in pop culture, for the hidden talents of everyday Americana. And I think that when you look at some of these segment producers whose job was, I think about Madeline Smithberg, shout out to her right now, and some of these other folks who their job was to find the folks out there who had an interesting story, an interesting talent, you know, and you know, you think about Dave having the yodelers on, or the bird callers, I should say.
Yeah, I love those.
Or yeah, absolutely. Or the grocery baggers, or some of the folks out there who had a talent that wasn't necessarily going to be featured on AGT. AGT does it a little bit now, where you'll see people who have talents similar to what you and Ken were doing, and then they'll get eliminated in the first round or whatever, you know, a little piece of it. And they use it for the entertainment factor. They use it because it is entertaining. They're not going to push them forward, but at the same time, they're going to feature them on the show because there is entertainment in that. There's the oddness, the strangeness, and it perfectly fit in with the culture of really every incarnation of David Letterman's broadcasts had a spot for the hidden talent of everyday Americana. And you and Ken certainly fit into that. Both times that you were on the show, Dave did bill you as a wedding DJ. So you've been doing this a long time. Very cool that you're still able to do that. Were you?
They liked the wedding DJ persona thing, you know, they want people to come on as average, regular people, you know, not trying to promote something or whatever. Like, you wouldn't want to go on there and go, I'm an actor, you know, trying to make it. They don't want that. They just want, oh, what do you do? Oh, you work at a grocery store. Great. You know, like that.
It's almost the lesser known about the person, the better. Because it's like, okay, here's a guy going to ride a unicycle that isn't just a unicycle. It's a tri-unicycle.
No chain on it. It's all run by wheels.
Yeah. And it's super interesting. And he's odd looking, And we almost don't want to know anymore because it's just, it adds to almost, I don't know if you want to call it the mystique or whatever, but vaudeville, you're right. These performers who would come out and do these interesting things, you don't want to know the backstory. It's the suspension of disbelief almost. And there's kind of a tone to that. Am I kind of right about that? Is that how it felt?
Yeah. And two things. One, I think him bringing, like, on our segment, there was two other acts. One was a guy who came out in front. He did a whole circus thing where he bounced the ball and did a jump rope. And then the other guy that was after us, he took a water bottle and drank it and smushed it all the way up in his face and drank it like in a say. But I think that's kind of a reminiscent of the Ed Sullivan type thing.
Definitely.
You know, they have the acrobats. And one of the things they told us, they said, we want you to know this is a very important segment to us. Stupid pet tricks and stupid human tricks are our largest watched things on Letterman. That's
signature pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you say she, that's Maria Pope that says that to you?
Maria Pope was there. Yeah. She was the first one. And then she wrote that nice thank you letter and on the Letterman letterhead. Isn't that
absolutely
cool?
Yeah. We got some of that back here. So when you said she said that to you, are you talking about Maria? Maria said that this is, hey, look, these signature pieces, stupid pet, stupid human tricks. They're very important to our show.
Yeah. They said, oh, these are the largest, ratings.
Yeah,
for Letterman. These segments, like when we advertise that Stupid Pet Tricks is coming up and we put it on, or Stupid Human Tricks, we have a huge rating. So you're a guest, just like any other guest, they're saying. You're an important guest to us. Do you want me to tell you a little bit of what happens when you first get there?
Before that, yes, I do. But before that, I want to know how the initial contact happened. Were you on other shows first, or was Letterman your very first? How did the contact with Late Show occur?
Yeah. Yep. It's interesting, isn't it? Like I said, I have no agent. I always looked at that little door, little crack in the door, and that gave me hope. I said, I can get on there at some point. In as you know, in 2000, I'm going to base this on 2001, which was the 9/11. Okay.
9/11. Yeah.
In 2000, I go out there to visit my brother who's living out there.
Yep.
He's just an artist and he's working odd jobs. And, I said, let's go see Letterman. I'm going to get tickets. And I did, I sent in for him and we went to sit in the audience, very similar to where you sat, very similar seat. Oh, let me drink with the Letterman mug here.
Hey, there you go. Shout out to Rupert G. Go to hello-deli.com and get your official Late Show with David Letterman merchandise. The only place to get Late Show with... Hello-deli.com is the only place, and it's sold by Rupert G. himself. Go to hello-deli.com. You get a mug, get a hat, get t-shirts.
I'm going to order
with love
more
by Rupert. Yep, yep.
Yeah, I'm going to, because I love this mug. I'd like to have another one.
Yeah, support Rupert. Absolutely.
We went out there and we got to sit in the audience for the first show when Dave came back from his operation. You remember he had the heart operation?
Oh my God. You saw the Foo Fighters coming through Everlong. You saw Dave bring out his surgeons and all of his medical team. You saw that's a historic Late Show that you got to see live. You and I didn't talk about that beforehand. That's crazy. You were at that show.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
So my brother said, cause my brother wasn't, you know, quite as big a fan, but when he went in there, he's like, oh, this is the coolest thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
You know, when you're waiting to go in there, there's a lot of time and you really have your, once they okay you, you could just go to that little pizza place and have pizza and stuff and then just get back in line. Once they have you on the list, they go, okay, you don't have to stand here. And so we had pizza, we're watching the big screen TV. We went in. When I was sitting in that audience and I'm like anyone else. I have dreams. Mm-hmm. I dreamt about being on the show and I sat there. I had a feeling and I said to my brother, I think I'm going to get on here. I think I'm going to get on here. And maybe that was my manifest. Maybe that was my, just you know, you're manifesting, you're driven. Yeah. Like for America's Got Talent, I stood in line with 10,000 people, man. You have to have a certain amount of drive to go on there and then get picked out of 10,000. But it's the same thing with this. So after I went home, that was 2000. Then was 9/11, 2001.
Yeah.
I'm trying to give you a timeline. Then 2002 is when I made the connection. Initially, they had live auditions around the country. They'll send out a guy from the show, one of the
a talent coordinator.
That's what you mean. Talent coordinator.
Yep.
Do
you remember who it was?
Do you want me to give names?
Oh, give names. If you remember who it was, absolutely. Yeah, let's do shout outs here.
It was a guy named Darren because he didn't get our trick. And then later on, I saw Darren. Remember when Seinfeld had the documentary, The Comedian? Remember?
Absolutely. Comedian was, very much.
Darren's in there when Seinfeld is at the Letterman show.
Yep.
Darren rides the elevator. I go, oh, there's the guy that didn't pick us.
You're kidding me. Oh, that's great. Okay. That's super cool.
It's okay that I'm saying.
Of course. It's history. It's history. It's positive. It's fine. Yeah. No problem. So a telecoordinator named Darren. Yeah. No, you're good.
This is the coolest thing I've done since, I just did my first TV commercial.
Yeah.
I just did this year, a TV commercial. So that's been my excitement. People where I'm working at, are seeing me, but
this is not nearly as cool as a TV commercial. Let's put this in perspective. This is not the coolest thing you've done. This is a thing you've done. The TV coolest commercial was way cooler than this, no question. Now that I do have a question before we get to the talent part. I have a question about you.
Your thing's the coolest thing.
No, come on.
I've never done it. Let me tell you how cool your thing is. I texted you that I had to go to the store.
Yeah,
and get a power cord because my power cord just fried up on me for some reason. You know how that is.
I do.
I go to Best Buy and I tell them what I'm doing, and I had a crowd of like five guys trying to help me. That's how cool your thing is.
Oh, come on. Well, I appreciate it. Those five guys, the team of psychiatrists, go to Michigan right now. There's five guys who need help. So I got to ask a question about you and the audience in 2000 with your brother. And I understand more than anybody the idea of the manifesting the dream and all of that kind of stuff. I fully believe in that stuff because I have had too many weird things happen to me that can be nothing except for that energy, that thing. Your brother, you came from a performing family.
Yes.
You kind of carried on some of that family tradition. It's in your genes. Is it in his genes as well, or did he understand what you were talking about? Because he came from that same family. Oh, that desire to perform on this legendary stage.
My brother was a guy I'd always have to say, hey, can you come rehearse with me? I was ready to rehearse and practice and put the time in. That's why we did the trick where I threw the apple. I practiced over and over and over. Ken, I'm going to tell you something about Ken. He's like the first violinist in an orchestra. You put him on stage, boom, he does it. I had to be the one to practice. He went up there and then he's like, go ahead, throw the apple.
Wow. You
know, I'm the one who had to practice hundreds and hundreds of times because I knew when I went out there, the pressure that I would feel. And I didn't want to be shaking my hand to nail that apple. But my brother is the same kind of way. He just kind of, he didn't really want to rehearse. He's into fine arts.
Yep.
So like he came to the Letterman show,
yep.
But it wasn't until he was there. And you know, everything about that theater is like time machine, man.
Yes.
You're sitting there and you were right where the band was. How cool was that? Like where the band is. And then, and you know how cool it is. Dave comes out and he's just kind of leaning over and you're like, wait a minute. We're talking to Dave. First of all, there's, you know, he's not on TV. He's right there.
Yep.
And then second of all, he's in plain clothes and he's just kind of like, hey, how are you guys doing? What's going on?
With the microphone. Like, and that's the thing, you know, everything that you said, absolutely. And him just being there with the microphone in his hand. And he has commented about that, how he liked messing around with the crowd and talking to the crowd beforehand. In fact, near the end of the run, that was the thing he liked one of the most. No jacket on, comes out and he's just, he's BSing with the crowd, playing with the crowd like a cat with a rubber ball almost, and just having so much fun. And when you have, you know, if you're one of those people that have the affection for Dave, like millions of people do, and you're in that audience and you can do exactly what you just said, get really present in that moment. And it's such a beautiful feeling. You got to experience that being on the stage with him. So I want to keep going back to that, to how this happened.
Oh, heck yeah, man.
You see Darren. Darren says no to you at first. What happened after that?
I try to tell people.
Yeah.
In entertainment.
Yeah.
Remember, you keep pushing forward. Do the same thing. Push forward. Those other people are going to change. You're going to get a new... You're going to get a new producer. You're going to get someone who gets you. It's all about Darren did not get us.
Yeah.
Ryan, the second guy, which wasn't until 2008.
6 years later. Wow.
We did the live audition 2002 here in Michigan.
Yep.
They record it. Darren. And then, by the way, just to show you how much of a pursuer of things I am, I called the studio about 6 to 8 months later. Hey guys, we haven't heard from you. You know?
Good for you.
He gave me the whole, I got Darren on the phone.
No kidding.
Yeah. And he goes, oh, well, we got you on file. We got you on file. And I knew that was a rejection there.
Sure,
so
sure.
I just told Ken, and you know, Ken is the most fun person. He's my best friend, by the way. Ken.
And still is to this day?
Still is. Oh yeah. If I were to get married, if I were to find my bride, I'm still looking. You know, I'm still looking for my bride. I'm looking for someone to marry. But I have a feeling right now she's sleeping with somebody else. I have a feeling.
She's not ready yet.
I have a feeling she's involved with someone else. She doesn't know. Oh, I'm supposed to be with her. But anyway, that's a joke. I have a feeling she's cheating on me right now. Yeah. Okay.
One could look at it that way. That son of a bitch.
But anyway, it is amazing that in 2002, we had the audition and we did. We thought, hey, this is going to go through because 9/11 was last year. This is good luck. We're going to lift our spirits. They didn't pick us. I did call, got Darren. Darren said, you're on file. So now we're in this period of, you know, we had actually rehearsed in front of our juggling buddies, our unicycle buddies. We're auditioning for Letterman. They're like, oh yeah, good luck with that. You know,
oh, the Dream Stealers. Oh God, the Dream Stealers. I love showing them wrong. I love proving the Dream Stealers wrong. That's the best feeling in the world. Yeah. Okay.
I have proven them wrong. Yep. I have. And so, then in 2008, my buddy Ken, he goes, Chris, I just saw a commercial and I recorded this commercial for Rachel Ray having a contest in Detroit for the Detroit Auto Show.
There we go.
Contest, and you make a video. I said, well, let me see what this is. He says, you're so good at the videos, because I have Apple, and you edit it and burn it on a disc. Remember burning things on a disc?
Oh, yeah, I sure do. Sure do.
You say burn something on a disc to a kid today, he doesn't know what you're talking about.
No, they think it's some sort of a drug reference. Anyway.
So I made the video. I sent it into the local Channel 4 for the Rachel Ray contest. Everything was last minute. Ken tells me on Sunday, I make the video Monday, turn it in on Tuesday. A day goes by, and then they say Thursday, you're one of our winners for the Rachel Ray contest. Friday. Yeah, come in Friday. So I get there, and we make a segment at the local Channel 4, and then they go, oh, by the way, we're going to shuttle you guys over to the auto show, and you're going to get to see the auto show before the black tie event, which is Friday night.
Hey, I got to ask a question here, because this is the Detroit auto show?
Big one, yeah. The
international. Thank you. Okay, because like if we're talking to people who are regional, and also the auto show today is very different than the auto show of 10 years ago, very different than the auto show of when we were kids. The Detroit auto show, this is a big deal. Like that's a major, major, major event in the city that back then that was kind of the city to be in when it comes to American motor vehicles, correct?
And it still is, man.
There you go.
A lot of people don't even realize we've got a stone's throw away from me, the Chrysler headquarters, which I've been in, I've performed in. They hired me to do the minivan anniversary and I juggled steering wheels for that. And they gave away a van right in there. And then Ford, Ford, they never took any assistance money. They're all their own. That family is tight.
I'll tell you this. I have a Ford vehicle I got this year. It's the first time I bought an American vehicle in almost 20 years. I've been European all to this point, but I fell in love with the new Bronco, and I had a two-door, beautiful two-door Bronco on order forever. The Michigan, the proudly assembled in Michigan sticker, I still have it up in the windshield, and I will not take that sticker out. I love that I have an American-made, Michigan-made Ford Bronco. Yeah.
That you have a Ford is awesome, because I have a Ford van, a Transit Connect. And by the way, I'll just throw this out there. If you want to come to one of the coolest classic car, like it's a 20 mile back and forth. So you go from Detroit 20 miles out to like Pontiac. Okay. It's called the Woodward Cruise. Look it up on the internet.
Yeah.
Woodward Cruise, Jay Leno comes. Jay Leno, and so does Tim Allen. Tim Allen, you know, he's real big in cars.
Big car guys. There you go.
Yes, and they're always at the. So if you're interested in something like that, once a year, it's in August. It's called the Woodward Cruise. I'm not a paid person to promote them, but you know.
No.
It's part of my heart. If it that will show you right there. This is the birthplace of, you know,
absolutely. Auto. And so that was an aside, but to show that you're in a segment with Rachel Ray is one thing. A Rachel Ray at the Detroit Auto Show. I think we've painted the picture. That's a big deal. And so they're shuttling you over there. What was the act that you did for that? Was it one of the same acts as Letterman, or was it something different?
Oh, you're going to laugh. So this is my first national television thing.
Yep.
And it's the rules are tell us how you use your car for your business or your career. How do you use your car? Well, the funny thing at the time, I did not have a van. I couldn't get a van at the time, money wise, you know. So I was using my I had a Pontiac Grand Am.
Okay.
And I would fill the back of it with speakers and so it was very interesting to show. What I did is I made a video in the driveway and I said, "Hi, Rachel Ray. I'm Chris Clark, and this is how I use my car for my career. I DJ weddings." And by the way, that was a key thing that I could show on my website, Rachel Ray approved, right?
Yep.
Because she, you know, she was just starting her show. This is in 07.
Yep.
This is in 07. So they made a really nice slow-mo, or they recorded me loading all this equipment out of the car. Like, here's the car. And then they speed it up. So I'm doing this, set it off. And it's just a ton of equipment.
Yeah.
I would pull up to weddings and the bride would be like, "Well, where's your van?" I go, "Oh, I have it all in my car." "You have it all in your car?" And they were always amazed. But so that was a unique thing. And that got me on this segment. She was basically doing a segment about the auto show. She had me and two other winners follow her while she took the tour of the auto show, and there was a lady from the car company explaining all the cars and, you know, the prototypes and all that stuff.
Yep.
And guess what? Hall & Oates was warming up. So I got to meet them. Yes.
Fantastic.
I took a picture with John Oates, you know,
with Oates. Oh, that's perfect. Cause a lot of folks would go for Hall. You went the other way. A lot of folks would go for Simon. You went for Garfunkel. You went for Oates. That's fantastic.
Yeah, Oates.
One of the best mustaches in music. That's fantastic that you
did
that.
I have the photo, but not with me. But I got
No. That's cool. You got Rachel Ray. Okay, so show us. Oh, look at that.
Just reflect. Okay, can you see it?
Look at that smile. And guess which one I'm talking about.
Get rid of that reflection. Okay, there you go.
No. It's gorgeous. What a gorgeous picture. So what did you do for the performance?
Their contest that I did. I
no, that was just it. So you didn't even perform
didn't
like
me doing,
okay, I got you.
I didn't do any magic or anything. Although I did tell her about my, actually I was trying to plug myself for her show.
Sure.
I gave her a gift set of juggling balls. I said, if you're ever wanting someone to come on your show, you know, cause you're doing so many things on your show, it's like you're a juggler.
Yeah.
I said, "Hey, I could come on with these." And I gave her a set of juggling bags and she never called.
Yeah.
I gave her my
juggled some of her cookware. Here's the new Rachel Ray cookware set. Actually, you know what? Not for nothing. My wife and I have a set of Rachel Ray cookware. We actually have the orange, up in our
the orange,
upstairs, the orange stuff upstairs right now. I could go get it and prove it, but I'm not going to. So you have this experience that helps to keep the fire burning, obviously.
Fire burning. These little things.
And sometimes that's all you need. Sometimes you just need a little spark to keep that fire burning. I can certainly relate. Yeah, I can certainly relate to that. This is in 07. Is Letterman the next thing, or did you do one of the other shows next?
08 was Letterman.
Yep. So this is the next big event was Letterman. How did this springboard to that, or was it just the confidence alone?
It was the confidence.
That's keep you going. Okay, I gotcha. So how did Letterman happen? And what was the first performance?
You're gonna love this.
I already do, my friend. This is fun.
I know, man. And I'm emotional here for you to have me on here. I appreciate it.
It's a blast.
I think I was going to say, you're probably an Indiana Jones fan. You remember when the light came through and he was in the cave
with the sand?
That's you, man. That was you right there. You had the light coming down. You were Indiana Jones.
Oh, good heavens.
That light shined on you. So you may have some very good things coming up in the future. Who knows? Maybe you'll be maybe you'll be on national television. I already think you're a very good personality, and you have
you're a sweetheart for saying so. You know, I think passion goes a long way with things, and one of the things that I'm passionate about is connecting with people, conversation, and I love with the other podcast that I do, the Men's Mental Wellness Podcast. The whole genesis of this show was because of that, and it's a little bit of what you're talking about. I'm interviewing all of these, my wife's building a men's mental wellness app called He Changed It. And I asked her one day, how can I help you do this? And because of my love for broadcasting, my love for Dave really, and other broadcasters as well. I knew that I kind of wasn't living the life that, I wasn't scratching the itch that was inside of me. And that itch was to communicate, to broadcast, whatever you want to call it. And so I said to her, I said, well, would you ever want a podcast for He Changed It? And she goes, yeah, absolutely. A men's mental wellness podcast. And I said, okay, well, I'll learn how to do it and I'll do it. And so I start doing the show and I'm having all of these, everybody from, up in Canada, there's a program called Hockey Night in Canada, Detroit, Michigan, big hockey state with the Red Wings and all that. Ron McLean is probably one of the most well-known, hockey broadcasters in Canada. Had him on, had, filmmakers, but also a lot of counselors, coaches, life coaches, psychologists, men who have stories. And there was one thing that kind of resonated. And it was that there are a lot of men in their 40s and 50s. The reason my wife is starting this app and this movement that she started called He Changed It is because there are so many men who are middle-aged or beyond that are feeling lost or empty. And I mean, you look at, the suicide number is horrible. It's like 7 out of 10 men, suicides are middle-aged men. You've got, never mind the heart attacks and the cancers and the strokes and the domestic violence and all of that stuff. And there's a lot of people out there who say it's because a lot of these guys aren't scratching an itch inside. They're not living a purpose, whatever. You may not be able to go join the NHL, but if you want to be a hockey player, go find a beer league. You may not be able to play on stage for thousands of people, but if you've got that musical thing inside you, get a guitar, learn 20 chords and go crazy and start scratching these itches. And simultaneously, I'm a gigantic podcast fan. I'm a Letterman enthusiast of a very unique ilk in the sense of the things that I've kind of learned. I made friends with a couple of these people who worked for the show for a long time. Rick Sheckman being chief of them. I always shout out Rick when I can. Rest in peace, buddy. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to start the Letterman podcast because otherwise I'm a hypocrite hosting this podcast, hearing all of these stories, hearing all of these things. And that's why the Letterman podcast started. I did it without any outcome whatsoever. And forgive me for those who have listened or heard the show enough and heard me tell the story enough, but I think it really does relate to this because I really feel a kinship to you. You wouldn't take no for an answer in the sense of I'm going to do this for me, regardless of the outcome. And
I'm going to die trying, stretch. Man.
There it is. And I think that there is something really cool about that. And there is a satisfaction that comes with that. And that's what this show is a living testament
if the show was living. I guess not. It's an artificial testament to that fact. Yeah. And so thank you for, like, I appreciate the words you're saying. I appreciate the words very, very much. And I much want to hear what, I love hearing the similarities with you, because you're sitting there in the audience looking at that iconic stage, and 6 years later,
you're on
that stage. And that is just, or 8 years
then
later,
invited
I guess.
Back. Invited back.
And then invited back. So
close your mind there.
So let's talk about that. Let's get to the first time that you're on, then we're going to get to the second time that you're on, and talk about these things.
After Rachel Ray,
yep.
I said, Ken, we're going to get on Letterman. That's the next thing we're going to do. We're going to get on Letterman. And now I have to make a video of him and I doing this trick, which we've been doing this trick, him on the unicycle and me throwing all kinds of vegetables. When I would do it, I would always think of Dave throwing the vegetables off the building.
Yeah.
So our original video we send in, I sent a email first. Ryan was the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think at the time he had only been doing that job about a year.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up being there several years. But so he got us right away. Like I said, he got us in the email. Like he hadn't even seen the video. I said, hey, I got me and my buddy Ken. He gets up on a unicycle with a fork in his mouth and the sharp part sticking out of his mouth, and he's up 8 foot in the air, and I'm throwing a apple, and then we go to a kiwi, and then we go to a strawberry.
Oh gosh, you did a strawberry. Holy smokes.
That's really impressive, because you hit the first one, you get down to the kiwi and then the strawberry. We send that in to him.
Yep.
It's a matter of a couple of days after he received it.
Yep.
Call on the phone. So I get the call on the phone. And basically he's like, okay, so we've got this, and we'll let you know. And as soon as he's saying, you know, he called me, I come home. You know, remember the days of answering machines?
Absolutely.
The old answering machines.
Absolutely.
I see the lights on, and I listen, and, you know, this is the late show. First, when he said this is the late show, David Letterman, I just went, what?
Did you pass out? Yep. Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
So I said to Ken, I said, Ken, now listen to me. We are going to be on because they're calling us. That's how it is in entertainment. I'm going to tell you, you have to be invited. See, people say to me, how did you get on Letterman? How did you get on Letterman? I'll say, I was just like you. I just kept trying and trying. But then they invited me. See, that's the whole thing. They have to choose you and you're invited. So then... let's forward to, so Rachel Ray was 07. Let's forward to, September of, 2008. Okay.
Yep.
I get a call on a Friday. Okay. We want you to ship everything out on Saturday. Cause remember, this is the time where Homeland Security and everything, you can't just like bring a unicycle. You can't even have the fork. Mm-hmm. You have to have it all shipped. So he says, would you believe it? These are some cool things you're going to love.
Yeah.
Here's the David Letterman credit card number. Just go to your local FedEx. Give them our credit card. They give me the credit card number. The David Letterman CBS credit card number. I have it. I go to the FedEx. I go, now, okay, you're not going to believe this. But this is the David Letterman show credit card number. And they said, just ship whatever you need to ship. And charge it to this credit card. And the guy's like, okay. And I guess that's how they do it with FedEx and stuff a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So that blew my mind. So
that's the process. Yeah. That's a surprising process.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think of it being that way. Okay.
So yeah,
that's a cool tidbit.
We ship the unicycle, everything out like overnight, and it's there by Monday.
Yeah.
It's all there. Like Ryan's like, yeah, we got it all. You know, because another little tidbit. Ken says to me, because Ken is on stage, he's kind of like Tommy Smothers, you know, from the Smothers Brothers.
Rest in peace, Tommy.
You don't think he's that, you don't think he's real smart or anything, but the guy's a genius.
Yeah.
Ken says to me, I have to deflate the tires and I have to ship a pump, because if they're inflated while they're on an airplane, the pressure will break the tires.
You don't even think about stuff like that.
You don't even think of stuff like that. So we shipped the unicycle, the pump, the apples, everything. I just got the apples at a local market, and Dave makes a joke about, oh, they swiped apples. I'm like, no, I just went in. But anyway, we had I had a bunch of apples, and they said we're just going to do the apple. We're not going to do we don't have enough time for the kiwi and the strawberry. The segment we did, now this highlight this, we had 4 minutes.
Yep.
Everyone else had 2 minutes. We had 4 minutes.
Yep.
When we came back to do the second time,
go ahead. Yeah. Finish that, and then I got a question.
I had to get more time out of them because the cotton candy machine.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to highlight is that these segments are only a couple minutes.
Well, also let's go to rehearsal, okay? Because you don't even realize you are now also in a position where you don't know if you're going to get picked. And because we see three, maybe four stupid human tricks on the segment, depending on time and all of that, but they actually rehearse more, don't they?
Book five.
Yep.
And they picked three.
For your show. Yep.
The both times I was on, but yep. I remember back in the early days when he was at NBC, they did do sometimes four. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're probably, you and Ken are thinking, oh, we're on the show. And then suddenly, oh, we may not be on the show.
Can I just show you this cool picture?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Ken and I, I'll try to, can you see us with the limo? And
absolutely.
You see, it says Dream Hotel.
Yep.
You see that, but
yep.
Can you see that picture?
Absolutely. Yeah, no. Okay. We can see it. You'll send it to me and then I can put it up over top as well. So yeah. Picture of you and Ken in front of the limo outside the Edsel Theater. This
little story. So they call us Friday. Yep. We go from not even knowing we're going to be on. Now Friday, I got to get Ken. Ken, you on board with me? Yeah, he's on board. Okay. Because he's got to tell his work, because he actually does work at a grocery store pushing shopping carts.
I love that part. Yep.
They loved it too. They loved it. Because, you know, Dave did grocery stuff early on in his childhood. So he gets approved to get the time off. We fly out on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we had the lady who booked the flights book us early in the morning. So we're there early. We can spend some time in New York, check in the room. We check in with Ryan, you know, and Ryan's like, okay, you're going to come Wednesday morning and we'll be having our rehearsal like by 1 o'clock, but you'll come in a couple hours early. We'll talk about everything. I never told Ken that we had to re-audition because I wasn't sure he'd be on board.
Because smart.
He's a guy who like, what do you mean? You know, it's like, what do you mean? We got to re-audition. So I never told him.
Yeah.
And I just acted like I didn't know about it, you know? And so we passed it. You know, he had, Dave's up in his office watching the whole thing on a monitor. He's watching the whole
rehearsal. Yeah. So you guys are actually on stage. So let me make sure I have it right. You go there around 10 a.m., whatever. You're in Ryan's office in the Ed Sullivan Theater building, or are you, you're not in the theater at this point?
In the building. Yeah. The whole time.
Okay. So you go over what's going to happen. But the cameras are live. Like in a lot of the offices, there are feeds of what's going on stage at that very moment. And you know, many staffers have been on and talked about. Yeah. Everything. It's all live. So as you're rehearsing, a number of the producers and perhaps even Dave himself could be watching what's happening.
You gotta be careful what you say because you don't want to be uninvited.
You were and were you actually told, like, that's common sense and that's what I would be saying, but you were told, okay, you were told that as well. Interesting.
What you say, everyone can hear you.
Yeah.
You know, we're glad to have you here, but you know, you don't want to be uninvited because, you know, you're here.
Common sense to most, but not necessarily common sense to some. So that's okay. Was there a musical act that night, and did you watch them rehearse as well?
The first show that we did was Russell Brand as the guest.
Yep.
He was the guest. And then, the musical guest was someone I didn't know. It was a band that I wasn't, so we'll be able to
find that out. No problem at all. We'll
if it was someone like, you know, you know, like you said, Simon and Garfunkel, I'd be like, yeah, with Simon and Garfunkel.
Well, but yeah,
The second time was Alicia Keys the night before.
Whoa.
They invited us to come sit in the audience. I said, DeKen, let's go sit in the audience. We can watch the show before the, the day of the recording. He didn't want to go. He wanted to go to Times Square. I said, come on, we can go watch Alicia Keys. He wasn't into Alicia Keys. So.
Can't you do both, Ken? What the hell? Times Square is four blocks away. Oh, my goodness. Okay, anyway, yeah.
I had to keep in my – I felt like one of those guys, like, Ken was my star. I got to keep him happy because he's got to catch the thing. He's got to pull this trick off. You see what I'm saying? Like, I felt like I was the agent, you know? Like, I felt like Letterman Show, they liked me and they're appreciative of me, but they really wanted Ken. So I treated Ken. I said, Ken, you are the guy that's getting the big laughs. I said, if you want to go down there, we'll go down there, you know? So
you're there for rehearsal now at this point here. You're on your best behavior. Yeah. Yeah. You're seeing some of these people on stage. Hey, there's Pat Farmer. There's Biff. There's all these people.
Oh my God.
That must've been really cool to see it from that perspective.
Yeah. Walking in the stage door was crazy that my name was on the list.
Yeah.
Biff. The second time we came out, Biff was like, you guys are back again.
How did that feel? Like that?
That felt awesome. And, you know, the Barbara Gaines show, you know, the woman that's on there with her, with the dark hair, she's a producer.
Are you talking about Mary?
Yeah. She was Mary, at the second one. Yeah. Yes. I remember her, the second one, not the first one.
I know Mary. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, you know her. Yeah. She was like, I really liked you guys' trick.
Oh, good for you. I'm terrified of her. That's fantastic that you had that's really great. Mary's awesome. So you had a Mary Barkley, encounter. Yes. That's cool. Yes.
And Maria Pope was the first one. That was 08.
Yep.
And then we're in there, and then they below the Ed Sullivan stage, there's where the guy does the sound effects.
Yes.
His studio is underneath the stage. That's where his whole studio is.
Yep.
And then got to go in there. He showed us in there, and then we're just hanging out there. They had like some refreshments for us and stuff. And so they picked Ken and I, a girl who did something with her eyeball. She was a really pretty blonde girl. And then she made her eyeballs. She pulled her eyelids. And then they had two women who played the piano with their noses before we came out. So we were in the middle, I think, strategically. Yeah. In the middle, you know, and then we did our, when Ken caught the apple, the tension, like, are they going to be able to do this?
Yeah.
So, you know, tense.
Yeah.
Even Dave, I thought he looked a little like, are they going to pull this off? You know?
Exactly. Yes.
And then when we did it, Dave gave Ken a, attaboy. Attaboy, Ken, he says. You'll hear him. Attaboy, Ken. And then the amount of noise cheering for us when we did it. And then
you popped the crowd, Ken, for sure. It was silent, trying to figure it out. Okay. And then there was the, you know, him getting on it. I'm going to throw caution to the wind, and I'm going to put the video of this over top. I believe I'm not stepping on toes. So over top of the, where I'm talking right now, the video is going to go. And so the audience who watches YouTube or a Spotify video will see it. But you won't be able to hear it. I'm not going to put the audio on there. So go back and watch the clip. Hopefully we can get the clip, to resurface and put in a public place. The silence of you guys doing this and throwing the apple up. And when it gets caught, the pop is huge. You popped the audience for sure. And Dave as well, like you said, and I think that right there, that moment encapsulates exactly what Stupid Human Tricks is. It's threading that needle. And when it does go, when the weird, trick that also looks nearly impossible or improbable happens, the experience, the communal experience of the audience enjoying that moment is wonderful. You as a second or third generation performer must have felt amazing in that moment.
And we went to that Ruth Chris Steakhouse down the street and got big thick steaks, and we were crying in there. I was crying in there.
Chris, after you're breaking my heart. Thing. I love it. I love
after
it.
After I walked out the door,
yeah,
the stage door, when it was all over for that,
yep.
And I'm walking out the door, and I'm like,
yep.
The excitement is still good because tonight we get to watch it on TV. And then I look up at the buildings and I start thinking, start spreading the news.
Yeah. The magic of New York.
If you can do it here, you can do it anywhere.
I can make it here. I can make it anywhere. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I said to Ken, we did that song. We did New York, New York, that song. And
yeah.
So we went down to the steakhouse. That's how it felt, man. It was like, let me tell you something. I grew up in a performing family since I was 6 years old performing. I'll be 56 this year.
Wow.
And 50 years. And yep. My entire life, all I heard was as growing up, because we sang and everything. You remind us of the Osmonds. When are you going to be on Johnny Carson?
Or whatever. Know? Yeah.
And I always thought, well, they would say Johnny Carson like it was that easy to get on. And I was like, well. This was my Johnny Carson moment. I said, yeah. It was like Braveheart putting the flag in the ground. This is my land, you know, freedom, you know, that's the feeling. I'm telling you, this is, you know, this is the feeling. So back to some little things from getting on there. So they eliminated it. Now we've got just the three acts. Okay.
Yeah.
But you would bump into the two people that didn't get picked, you know.
Yeah.
And
do you remember what they did? Do you remember the road not taken that night?
Yeah. One girl was there with her husband. Actually, she flew out there with her husband and their infant baby. She was so excited to be there, and she took some food, or I would just say like an M&M or something, put it on her nose, and then she could reach her tongue up and pull it off and eat it.
Wow, lucky guy. That's fantastic. The road not taken. What was the other one?
The other one was it was a guy who he seemed a little strange, you know. He had some kind of a t-shirt on with I hope he doesn't wear that shirt on the show because it was kind of some drug related thing.
Oh boy.
You know, marijuana thing or whatever. I don't know.
Sure, but, sure.
Maybe they eliminated him for that, but he was on a treadmill.
Yeah.
And he was doing the treadmill and juggling, and he was singing. And so anyway, it was entertaining. I mean, it was odd.
Yeah.
And so he was eliminated, and that girl. So then, like I said, we had the two women who were very nice.
Yeah.
Who played the piano with their nose. And that was very Dave, you know.
Oh yeah.
Thing. And he joked around about, you know, you're putting your nose on the piano and this and that. And what are you doing? What are you doing? The one girl was a really cute college girl. She's just a student. Yep. And then the other lady sold like some type of a Tupperware thing. And he was getting all into that, saying, oh, we should get together later and do some cooking or whatever, you know, how he does the cooking. And so, and then they had us, and then the act after us. Now I'm blanking out a little on, girl with eyelids. She owned a family bowling alley. And so she had this trick, and she was real pretty and stuff. So I thought, yeah, she's great closer, you know, really good looking.
Yeah.
And so, I stayed in touch with her for a little bit on Facebook and,
good.
Yeah. And I lost touch though, but, so then we went over in the hotel, the Dream Hotel is where we stayed. And, later on after we had stayed there, I was looking in a magazine and I saw Paris Hilton just coming out of whatever thing she was doing at the Dream Hotel in New York. And there she is standing in front of the Dream Hotel where we stayed, Paris Hilton. I think that might be one of theirs. They have some that are chain, you know, the Hilton and then the Dream. I looked it up. I think it's connected. So
one of their other brands within the same company family. Yeah.
You can see the theater from there. You can see it out your window. It's like down the street a little bit. And then so then once we were done, they shipped everything back to us.
Yeah.
And then the fun part was everyone who saw it, you know, and I've had those videos to show what I've accomplished, and that's helped me get bookings, you know.
That's amazing. That's the next question is, you know, and I mean, when we were kids, I think that, before the internet, you appear on Letterman, local news is doing a story on you, no matter how you appear on there, whether I remember, there's a gal from our city who got picked for, I don't know if it was Know Your Cuts of Meat or what it was, one of those segments in the audience of Letterman, of Late Show. And it's before the internet. It's before the internet had kind of become what it's become. And it's on our 5 o'clock news locally. So obviously it's a different time and a different place, but you said it yourself, you got bookings and stuff from it. When you were featured on Stupid Human Tricks, what was the local reaction in your community for that, Chris?
Well, we got a story on, CBS, news.
A local affiliate, yeah.
Like if you Google them, things will come up that I think are still, you might even find a local news thing that, remember when we did the live audition, that they took pictures of us for that.
Oh, there you go. So they're kind of connecting dots. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And same with what you're saying. And yeah, they were like, some local entertainers get to meet Dave, you know, those kind of things, you know, little things. But they didn't bring us in the studio or any kind of big thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be bigger out where you are, even maybe, because I saw you got on the BBC, didn't you? You got on
the CBC. Yeah, that was a cool thing. I have a real soft spot for the CBC, the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, for those who don't.
I said BBC. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's one letter off, and Britain and Canada.
Canadian Broadcast System.
Yeah, no. There's the BBC as well. But that was cool. That was after being at Rupert's retirement thing. They I don't even know how they found out about it, but they found out and they reached out to me.
Wow.
And that was a very cool a thing. And when you like, I think about Ken, like, and don't get me wrong, the new stuff is neat. I'm glad you got bookings out of it. That's really cool. You can't get better advertising than that, especially Dave saying to you, oh, you're a wedding DJ. How's that going? And all of that kind of stuff. That's great. But the part of me that loves Letterman so much, and the just the askewness of the show, which I just adore, is the idea of Ken at Kroger the next day. And I just wonder about Ken, and if there were people going, wait a second, you were the guy.
They still do.
Yeah. Oh, that's delightful. That's delightful.
He is known as the guy from Letterman. And
he works at Kroger.
This is how funny Ken is, okay? And by the way, Ken is so obsessed with this little bun of fame. Every time I see him, he brings it up. Every time. And I love it. He'll say, Chris, didn't we do Letterman together? I go, yeah, we did. And you know his voice. He's like, you got us on, didn't you? You got us on, Chris. Oh, God, even so more good. Amazing than me catching the apple was you getting us booked on there. That was more amazing.
Well, never mind his unicycle riding skills. Okay, so that's first time. That's the first time. Let's go to the second time. I've got about, just so you know, I've got about 30 minutes left. So that's plenty of time to go through some of the other stuff we want to talk about. So 08 is your first time. I was going to say you are one of the few acts that have been on the show that actually got invited back to do Stupid Human Tricks twice. I want to know what happened in between, if any of your other television appearances happened in between, and how did you get invited back? How did that happen? Did you that second trick? It felt like you guys were like, okay, we are going to tailor make a trick that will be perfect for the sensibility of Stupid Human Tricks. As the viewer, that's what I see for the second trick. Is that the case?
The second trick I created.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
You've never seen anyone do it. even, you know how great Cirque du Soleil is? They never had a guy put their head in anything.
No, it's oddball. I actually thought I can remember watching it that night. I can remember it when I saw it.
Oh, you saw it before you knew me.
I saw every late show.
Yeah,
it was my constant in my life. Like there was, I had them all DVR'd, and there was at a certain point I would have gone through all of them for sure. Most of them I did watch the evening of. It was how I finished my day. I specifically remember that trick, and I can specifically remember as a viewer watching, wondering if Dave was going to do it. There was a part of me that wondered if Dave was actually going to put his head in the cotton candy thing and actually do it. That's how close the sensibility of the trick was to the show. I understand why he wouldn't have done it, but I also remember specifically wondering, oh God, is Letterman going to do it now? So anyway, that was as a viewer, that was my reaction back in the day watching that trick. So it's not surprising to me at all that that's the trick that you tailor made that trick for Late Show. It makes sense.
I said to Ken, because there's some other stupid human trick friends of ours who were on there.
Oh, okay.
They got on twice. And so I said to Ken,
you got
to
connect me with those people too, Chris. You were always our first, but we got to get some
Hayward.
More.
Mark Hayward. I don't know if it's Mark Hayward.
We'll get connected.
We should have him on, actually.
That's exactly where I'm going with that. But anyway, yeah, Mark, so yeah.
Him and his buddy, he's the one that, do you remember the trick where he did something with shooting a marshmallow with a mouse trap and that's what he did. He shot a blow dart. And he hit a mouse trap, and the mouse trap flinged a marshmallow at him, and he caught the marshmallow.
Oh, absolutely. Fantastic. That's fantastic.
That's
okay.
He's a juggling buddy of ours. He's a juggling. And then so we were impressed with it. We looked at him like he was a celebrity.
He's from the same town as you?
No, I don't know where he lives.
Okay.
No, he's part of the community of the American Juggling Association. So,
I see. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, we know him from the conventions and stuff.
Gotcha.
It's magicians and jugglers. It's all small group. We all know each other pretty much, especially on the internet now.
And from what I've heard, nobody parties like magicians and jugglers. That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's true or not. And I know that you guys have a secret code, so we'll move on. But I've heard that that is the case. Anyway,
they got on twice. So I said, this is like, you know, Detroit Pistons, back-to-back champions. We got to go on. Oh, by the way, Lions.
we got some time travel going on here. We're recording this before the Lions playoff game.
Yeah.
And we want to go on record right now saying that, talk about manifesting. We are manifesting the Lions win every football game in between the recording of this and the airing of this episode. So let's see what happens.
We got to go to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl.
Let's see what happens.
So I'm a real Detroiter, by the way, folks. I was born in the city of Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay. I grew up, spent most of my life in Detroit. Now I'm out in the Bloomfield area, which is a suburb, but I'm a Detroiter my whole life. But anyway, so long story short, I love cotton candy. Anything that has to do with cotton candy, I love. And I created a little science show, The Science of Cotton Candy. I do it at schools, and I make cotton candy. I give every kid a Ziploc bag of cotton candy as a gift at the end, but I explain to them the whole process of how cotton candy is created through the heat and the science part of it, you know,
the chemistry of cotton candy. Well done.
And so I don't want to get into that, but anyway, I said to Ken,
that's a show unto itself, Chris.
Yes. And maybe you'd like to talk to Ken sometime. He's hilarious. But anyway, I said, Ken, now, I'm juggling cotton candy in my show with the cotton candy. I'll make balls of cotton candy and juggle them and stuff. I said, this is entertaining. You know, I think I'm the only guy juggling cotton candy. I said, come over to my house. Let's put some cotton candy on your head and make you a cotton candy wig. So we didn't put his head in there yet. I was basically, it almost looked like a colonial wig with the cotton candy. I thought that would be funny, you know. And can you make it more of a stunt? Can you make it more of a stunt? They said, and I said, well, like what, put his head in the machine or something like that? Yeah, but you know, if it's too dangerous, don't, you know, I go, well, I'll work on the technical part.
Ken and says, who's they? Is that the Letterman people saying this to you?
Ryan, yeah. And so, okay, so because he was the only one that really talked to me, and we email, and I said, Ken, now look, they want us. If they don't want you, they're not communicating. If they have any communication with you, they want you.
Yeah.
So I go, we're going to be on again. We're going to be on again. I sent the same trick to Leno, the cotton candy trick.
Okay.
When I'm backstage in the green room, the guy
at Letterman, Letterman,
the guy who does the ball and the jump rope, I want to get this in there because this is funny. He calls the producer over at Leno because it's a friend of his. He has him on the phone and he goes, don't tell me you're doing the cotton candy trick on Letterman. I had to pinch myself. I'm in the green room talking to the producer of Leno's show. I'm at Letterman. And these guys are like wanting the trick. I said, too late. We're over here. We're doing it over here. You see how connected those shows are? You see?
That's really special. And as an enthusiast of Letterman, longtime enthusiast of Letterman, you know, that is a really cool little moment for you. And I can understand, I think a lot of folks who enjoy this show, first off, what's wrong with you? Second off, they would understand exactly what you're talking about. That's a cool, surreal, unique to that moment feeling. Yeah. That is like you're in the green room at the Ed Sullivan Theater. And you're talking to someone at Leno and they're, admonishing you for not doing the trick on their show, but doing it on Letterman. That is super, super fun.
I said, snooze, you lose, man. You snooze, you lose. I said, but we got other things, but I got to squeeze this in because of time. Sure. I don't forget this. Okay.
Yeah, we're still good for a while. Yeah, we're good.
Oh, we're good. Okay.
We're good. We got another 20 minutes.
Well then. Okay, I'll build up to it, but don't let me forget to tell you how the cotton candy machine almost didn't work. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I fixed it. But anyway, so I said to Ken, I said, listen, cotton candy puts smile on people's faces. If we can figure out a trick with cotton candy, we're on there, no doubt. As soon as I told him the trick was called, I told Ryan, this is called cotton candy toupee. Now you tell the trick is called cotton candy toupee to Dave. You know it's gonna be ka-ching.
Yep.
They gave me a conference call. They called me out of the blue. It was a conference call. Ryan, you could hear because it was on a speakerphone. Dave's there and I can hear him, but he doesn't think I hear him. But he likes to stay behind the scene. He doesn't, like I was telling you, he's even like that with his celebrity guests. He'll meet them on the show and then the only one he's going out with to hang out with would be Regis.
Yeah.
Or
Rickles or someone like that. Rickles. Yeah.
He read my mind. So he's whispering to Ryan what to ask me. So they gave me a conference call. One, they wanted to make sure that if they and I thought that was nice, you know, if they did any kind of joke towards Ken, would he be offended, you know?
I love that.
They didn't want to hurt his feelings.
Okay. And now that you're saying this, okay. I got to stop you there because again, when Ken is on the stage, call it a persona, call it that unique look that he has, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
You think, okay, oh, they're going to make fun of Ken for being the look that he has or whatever.
Yeah.
I just want to point out what you're saying here is very, very important to me that consideration is made. Like, is Ken in on the joke with this? And that is a very cool little piece of trivia on that. I love hearing that. I'm glad that you said this, Chris.
Yeah. And he said his fame, you know how Dave says, what's the deal with this? Or what's the deal with that? And I knew that was Dave. I knew. Yeah. Ask him, what's the deal with Ken? Is Ken okay with blah, blah, blah. And I go, what's the deal with Ken? Oh, Dave's right there. So basically I said, you know, you can see how genius he is with his skills, and he's a circus history. You know, he reads a lot of circus stuff. Ken is in on it. He loves being there for the whole Ed Sullivan experience. And we get Dave. We like mm-hmm. Dave. Nothing Dave will do will offend us. We're just glad to be there. You know. And they were cool with that. And then
never mind the cheap plug for Kroger.
So
you get this conference call.
Logistics. Yeah. You want to know the logistics of the trick. How dangerous was it? And then I practiced doing the by the way, to the viewers, I had my friend Ken put his bald head in a cotton candy machine, which is very dangerous.
Yep.
I came up with the idea, instead of, you know, you spin the cotton candy around like that, I would just turn the pan.
Yeah.
Would that work? And then we had to figure out, how is it going to stick to skin? Well, it turned out water was the best thing. You spray his head, and then it, just like with a stick of cotton candy.
Yeah.
If you spray that stick and get it moist, it'll work better. So he does actually, the funny thing is, he does actually burn his, he singes his head just a little bit on the first part. I put the liner in there. Now I know later on, I didn't have to have that liner in there, but the liner in the pan is what kept the cotton candy in the pan. And I was afraid if I didn't put it in there, it would be blowing everywhere.
Sure.
And because the theater was very cold, you know how they always say his theater's cold?
It is. It's very cold.
I said, now, we
can almost see your breath. That's how cold it is.
Right.
Yep.
We can do this trick, but we'll have to have 4 minutes like the last time. And Ryan's like, 4 minutes? I can't give you 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Here's a hook, line, and sinker. Are you ready for this?
Absolutely.
Dave cancels the top 10 list to give us more time.
There you go. You bumped an institution off the show. Look at that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
So Ryan comes in. Okay.
And you still had to pass. You still had to be the top three out of five too, right? So you still had to go past that. Who rehearsed it with you? Do you remember who rehearsed the trick with you? Do you remember that?
I don't know the guy's name, but he was one of the stage manager type guys.
Okay.
He was Dave, like the guy that would keep going to Dave. And then he ended up working at The View and stuff. Like, he got other, after it was
Brian
all.
Brian Tetta was the guy who okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You
great.
Know him?
Yes. Yes.
You know all these guys.
Brian, it's cool that it's Brian.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what was the question? I'm sorry.
No. So you the second time you were there, what was the date again?
Oh, that was in 2013. And just a month before, I was on America's Got Talent.
Right. Okay. So I want to go back to that as well, but we're going to do that after we finish the second Letterman thing, because that's the most important part of this. We'll dovetail it to AGT.
Letterman's the most important.
Absolutely. So, you know, again, you're back 5 years later. You've tailor-made this trick with the cotton candy. It's fantastic. We'll put some video over top of this as well. So for those who are the audio, you might want to jump on the YouTube or the Spotify for this. Because it is really funny. You put the cotton candy, I would have called it a hairpiece, by the way, not for nothing, not that I mean anything. I would have called it a cotton candy hairpiece, but that was just me. You had five acts and you had to be in the top three again, right?
We did the audition, but I knew we were already on.
It was perfect. It was.
We were already on. They had to go through the process, and they picked the fella I'm still in touch with, and he did the jump rope and bouncing the ball.
Yes.
And then us, and then the guy did the water. But here's what happened. Same thing. They call us like on a Friday, fly out on, get all ready. Tuesday, we're there. And that's the day. Do you want to come watch Alicia Keys? And nope, we don't get to, because Ken wants to get a, but okay. So I'm just all relaxed. I said, oh, this is so much easier than trying to do the juggling trick. We just go in there, do the cotton candy thing, get there for the rehearsal. The cotton candy machine is not working. It's not spinning.
And this is your machine you shipped out there, or did they rent one?
I wanted to ship mine out there because I knew, you know, how to use it. And I didn't know if theirs would be too small for his head or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I said to them, do you mind if I just, no, we don't mind. It's very expensive to ship back and forth. And once again, Letterman credit card.
Same deal. Same process. Okay.
So it's not working. We're at the dress rehearsal. It's not working. And, we have to have it working for the dress rehearsal because we have to do the trick so Dave can see it. Mm-hmm. And so that was the defining moment. I can see the electric going in and there's the little needle that shows, okay, I said, now there's electricity going in here, but why is it not working? I was nervous as heck. Ken was being really funny and supportive. And he was like, Chris, don't worry. At least we got a free trip to New York. I said, but I want to be on the show.
Yeah,
man.
No, the performer needs to get out. Yep.
We're in the green room. Ryan comes in. He goes, Chris, like, it's all on me now.
Yeah.
Forget about Ken. This is on me. You have 7 minutes to figure out how to get the cotton candy machine working. I go, 7 minutes. You mean like, who wants to be a millionaire? Like, can I call home? Like, what, you know? And I go, he goes, exactly. I go, well, that would be my only thing now is to call somebody. So I call in Michigan, Detroit Popcorn Company. They handle cotton candy and popcorn. The guy answers the phone, who sometimes isn't even there. The guy answers the phone that repairs the cotton candy machines.
Wow.
So his name was Mike. Now I got to explain. Mike. Okay.
Powerful name. Well done. Yep.
Mark, the magician, I do cotton candy. Okay, I have a trick. I'm actually in New York right now, in the Letterman Theater, Ed Sullivan Theater, gonna do Letterman. We're 7 minutes away. The cotton candy machine's not going. Is there a breaker switch on it? He goes, yeah, there is. I go, there is? He goes, yeah, it's a teeny little, like little white dot underneath the machine. He goes, you have the Deluxe World Win. He's like talking about, he says, I remember yours. It's the Deluxe World Win. It's like 1970, whatever. I go, yeah. And he goes, okay. I go, how about if I just, you're on the phone with me while I try to do this. I go, okay. I flip the cotton candy machine over. There's the little dot. And I'm like, please let this be the thing that fixes it. I push it. It's all plugged in. I push it. It fires up. And it works. And he goes, when that was shipped, probably it got knocked around.
Yeah. Yeah. And, makes sense.
You plug it in. It's not
needs
working.
A reset.
Needs a reset. And the relief in that theater. I could feel the relief because Dave wanted this trick, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dave's been probably talking about cotton candy trick all week. You know, he's like, oh, this is going to be great for the segment because nobody has done head in the cotton candy machine before me. I mean, go ahead and try to show me. It hasn't happened. I created this trick. After we did it, guess what? Family Guy, they did a segment. You can find it. Just go on YouTube or something. Type in Family Guy Trump cotton candy machine.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And they take Trump, you know, with his funny hair. And because Dave said in our segment, he goes, it's some kind of a comb over or something like he said. Is one of his But they had a segment with the Trump cartoon and they stuck his head in the cotton candy machine.
So as that happened, Dave did say that. I happened to notice in reviewing it again before the show here, there's an inside joke with hair pieces and Paul and the band specifically. If you listen to the Paul Schaefer episode or watch that, you know what I'm talking about. And or Will or Felicia, now that I think about it, Dave looks over at Paul a couple of times, and Paul used to have this. He had this knack for knowing if somebody came out with a hairpiece or a weave or something, and it was a kind of an inside joke for the band and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, you see Dave kind of look at Paul a couple times and there's something going on there. And at least it's happening in my mind. And I would like to think that that's what it is, but yes, there was particular delight. When Ken pulls his head out and he's got the cotton candy toupee. It was fantastic. It was a great moment.
It came out great.
Oh yeah. 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 It was perfect. It was
under all that pressure and the liner. You saw how I pulled the liner out to try to fix it, you know, and I think Dave kind of liked that it was like almost not working, you know?
Sure. Oh yeah. There's a little delight to stupid human tricks with the, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? It looks kind of low budget. Are we, and then woo, it does work. And that makes it even better when it does work. So that's
what made it unique on both of those tricks. The first one too, he said, my heart was palpitating or something like that. You know, like this is heart stopping. And And the same with the cotton candy one. I didn't think the cotton candy one was gonna have that crescendo, you know, as big as it was. But I'm telling you, the amount of laughter, it was the kind of laughter like you'd have that uncontrollable kind of laughing when you would see the Three Stooges do some kind of a thing. Yep. It was a Three Stooge kind of a thing, really.
Yep. You know? Absolutely. It was. Different kind of laughter and a different kind of pop at the audience than the first time you were on. Again, very cool. So you finish up similar feeling, similar euphoria. You know, same thing. You know, have a nice dinner, go back to the hotel, watch the show on TV. Was it similar experience?
Ryan comes in speechless. Produce, you know.
Yeah.
Segment producer. Just speechless. Comes into the green room.
Teta is just a nice guy.
Teta
is just a nice guy.
Oh, Ken. Oh.
Brian Teta, the segment producer, is such a nice guy though, too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So yeah, they're real nice. We had little cupcakes back there and hug. Just hug. No words.
Aww.
Hug. Like, as we're leaving, you know, the other people, Biff, you guys did a great trick on that. You did. Oh, Dave liked you. I go, did Dave like it? Well, we know when Dave likes somebody, you know. We know the whole, I think they want to do a good job for Dave. They want to see Dave happy. They know Dave takes everything seriously. You've heard Dave talk about how seriously he takes the show. He'll go home and feel bad if it's not, if he didn't think. And when you have something like what we did both times, we were in key with what Dave likes, you know.
I was just communicating with someone online and they talked about, I have this thing about when people say that Dave was mean. Sometimes I'll actually just take exception and I don't try and take comment bait or be baited by comments, I should say. But there are times where, especially with Dave being mean, I'll kind of correct a little bit and say, you know what, Dave is high level, and he had a show at the highest level, and his show of choice when he was growing up, his show of choice, the top of the heap, was the top show, which is the Tonight Show. He wanted to emulate the Tonight Show. That is the highest level, and he expected people who came on the show to bring high level with them. And if they didn't bring high level, we're talking from the celebrities who would show up, even if they were plugging a movie, they bring high level if they can. The segment producers need to get that high level out of those people. And that includes the talent acts who come on the show. If the tone is going to be goofy and off kilter and weird, it's going to be a high level version of it. And the standard is really high. And when people didn't bring that high level, I know how I feel if it's in my business and maybe I hire somebody to help somebody in my business or whatever, and they don't bring their A game. I know how I feel about that in regular life. It's kind of natural that if you want a show of high level and somebody doesn't bring that, it's going to perturb not just Dave, but the people who put the show on. And so, you know, clearly what you guys brought to it, you wouldn't have been brought back. They wouldn't have kept in contact with you. Like, I think that's a perfect, that's a nice little clue to how the show works and how they did stay in contact with friends of the show. Safe to say, man, Chris, you were a friend of the show.
Yeah. That was a great feeling. That was a really good feeling. And it's the best moments of my life, really. I mean, like you said, buddy, how you get emotional.
Yeah.
You know, it's the best moments of my life. I'll tell certain people the story. And I really enjoy talking to you because I know you're really interested in it. Sometimes I'll try to tell a relative or a friend and they just are like, okay, can I watch my program now? You know, it's like, you know, I'm watching your show. Watching your show and when we're simply just talking about Letterman, it's like it's alive still. It really is.
It is. Absolutely. Well, that's the purpose of this show, to keep it alive. The purpose of this show is to transfer the knowledge of how big a deal this show was to the culture at the time. Now, we got about 5 minutes. I want to make sure that we talk about anything else that we want to talk about here. AGT, real quick. Was it you and Ken on AGT? And what did you do on America's Got Talent?
Before I do that.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Can I give my website?
Oh, that was the how I wanted to finish it. Let's do it now. No. Give your website. Give your website. Absolutely. Okay, how can people get in touch with you?
Because I know you're out in Canada.
Western Canada.
I'd love to visit out there sometime, but
beautiful. God's country.
If anyone ever wants to be in touch with me for any performing reasons or any kind of appearances, or I just did my first TV commercial. I've done Letterman twice, Leno, Rachel Ray, America's Got Talent. I have a personality.
Never mind the Detroit Auto Show.
Yeah, Rachel Ray. I'm looking for a good agent. I'm always putting that out there because it's so hard to get an agent.
You never know.
A legitimate agent who would take me serious. I got the little Michael J. Fox look, you know, but especially when I was younger. But my website is I have Mr. Wizard Magic, mrwizardmagic.com.
Nice.
And if you just Google me, you'll find me. I'm in Michigan. You know, Chris Clark is my name, or Christopher Clark.
Yep.
And I'm currently, for a living, mostly on weekends, doing we have a lot of people who, you know, the country clubs, the banquets. I do weddings. I am a wedding DJ.
Yep.
And then I do magic shows, juggling. I have about 10 different school assemblies. One of them is the Cotton Candy Science Show. I do a dinosaur show. I do puppetry. And so I have that's what I do. This is on the internet, Chris Clark in Michigan, MrWizardMagic.com.
I'll put it in the intro too. I'm going to shoot a separate intro for this, and I'll put it at the front of the show as well. So just so you're aware.
I don't have anything else. Like, I'm not on any sitcoms. I would love to be, you know,
you love to perform and you have that inner, the desire from within to perform and you feel like you're being you when you are performing. Safe to say?
Yes. And you know, my home comedy club is the Magic. I mean, Comedy Castle here in Royal Oak, Michigan.
Yep.
That's the place where Tim Allen and the guy Dave Coulier from
Full House. Yeah.
And
they came up through that Comedy Castle.
Yeah, I've been able to I'm a friend of the Comedy Castle, I have a whole line of comedians that I'm friends with who some of them were working with Tim Allen when he was not a big star, you know, they're still friends with him and they open for him. And I've done stand-up comedy and I've enjoyed it. I haven't made a living at stand-up, but I have all those tools. And if I had a good agent out there who took me seriously, because a lot of times they won't pick you because they already want somebody who's big already, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like national.
Sure.
And some will take somebody, but anyway, what was the other question? I'm sorry.
No. So, and let me say this, Chris, from one guy who's indie, but doing what he loves, to another person who's indie doing what they love. I salute you for it. And I'm really grateful that you are scratching that itch and you are letting it out and you are not listening to the dream stealers out there. That's a really cool example. My wife and I have this saying, within our dynamic, grateful in the grind, you know, while we're grinding it out, we're just grateful for the actual process of things that are happening within the grind. As she's building her nearly impossible business to build, she's grateful as she's doing that. As I'm kind of throwing this out there, I'm grateful just for the process of it. And one thing that has been, remarkably clear, we can talk about AGT the next time you come on the show. I think we should finish off on this. The thing that I love about you, and I appreciate
you inviting me again.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think one day we need to have you and Ken on, first and foremost. I think definitely. That needs to happen. And you're the guy that facilitates Ken. You're his handler. So we'll do it that way. But one thing I got to say is that I can feel in you that you are grateful in your grind. You're super, super grateful. You love it. It energizes you. You have a passion for it that just comes from within.
And you'll do it on any level because the process is more important than the outcome. I love hearing that. It's so cool. I feel like you're a brother from another mother when it comes to this particular aspect of life. And go Lions, right? That's what we're cheering for. We're cheering for the Lions. Is that the deal?
We're playing Tampa Bay Buccaneers this weekend. Hopefully we'll go straight to the Super Bowl.
Okay. And we'll let history be the judge if we are manifesting this or not, because this will come out a few weeks after. Chris, okay. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be on the Letterman podcast. I'm going to do a quick outro and then we'll say our goodbye privately. Is that all right?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Yep.
Of course. There it is right there. Like, this has been, if there was an episode of the Letterman podcast that was a prototype, that was a blueprint for what we want to do on the show, that is it right there. Because yes, we want the people who were part of the show, made the show, all of that stuff. Of course we want that. We want, you know, some of the people who are featured on the show as celebrities, whatnot. Of course we want that. But at the end of the day, of the people featured on David Letterman, clearly Letterman, what he did was a time-honored tradition with Stupid Pet Tricks, Stupid Human Tricks, Meryl, all hail Meryl as well, Meryl Marco, for creating these concepts of something that was classic, like Chris said, on Ed Sullivan, put with a Letterman twist to it. And Stupid Human Tricks was certainly that. We want to have more folks who were a part of the show on Stupid Human Tricks as well. And I think this is a really good example of how folks who were a part of that segment, how it changed their lives. Seeing Chris talk about this with the passion that he did was absolutely inspiring to me. I love it so much. Clearly, there's a kinship with all of what we're doing here. That has been another episode of the Letterman Podcast with Mike Chisholm. Coincidentally, I am Mike Chisholm. Thank you and good night.
Overcoat and underpants.